Confuse us with Binary Jazz, the board game, no affiliation. We are a bipartisan podcast in the sense that statistically, one of us or one of our listeners is bisexual, and we love you for that. And partisan in the sense that we are very partisan. Down with automatic weapons, trans lives matter, and health insurance for all.
And more spacesuits for everyone.
Yeah. That's the big news of the week was we couldn't have an all-woman spacewalk because there wasn't enough female-sized spacesuits.
Not enough mediums.
Well, yeah. It's funny because they are unisex, right? Theoretically. But didn't really seem to pan out in this situation.
One size fits men.
I also find it curious that the sizing, that they don't have smalls. They've just, like, lopped that option right off. But, like, an extra large is necessary.
I've been reading this book about space, because that's what I do. And it's about, I think the opening sentence was, like, rocket scientists hate you. Because, like, humans are a pain in the ass to put in space. We're not satellites. We need to, like, breathe and excrete stuff and... You know, like there's all these requirements we have that satellites don't. So we're sort of hard to work with. In the Apollo days, this is such a silly thing for me to know, but the catheter that they had to use for urination, right? Or the sleeve, whatever, right? Only came in large, extra large, and double XL because when they asked the astronauts to put their measurements down for small, medium, large, every astronaut in the program was a large, regardless of actual anatomy. So. Large, XL, and double XL, which, I mean, obviously, like, that makes sense. Wow. The Apollo days.
I love self-surveys. That's all. It always pans out very honestly.
And that's not really a NASA thing, is it? I mean, NASA's like, let's measure that. I'm not sure I understand how that wasn't part of being an astronaut, given everything else that you had to go through.
That's true.
I don't know.
It's also like, I mean, I don't know. There's so many things with NASA and going to space and like the assumptions that are made and not made and then the measurements that are taken and not taken where you're just like, nobody thought of a what if or like a, nobody just, it, I don't know. Just there's enough meetings about these things. You know that there's enough meetings about these things.
What if someone's junk wasn't actually large? What if it was average?
Yeah, so what happens if you're like a realist and you're like small? NASA's like, oh, sorry, you're not qualified to be an astronaut. What? Like, seriously? That's
the deal breaker all of a sudden. You're like I went
that's
in
the
that-
thing.
I went in the G-force thing and threw up everywhere, but this is the deal breaker.
I puked on the vomit comet, right? And this is what's going to do me in. Yeah. Yeah, it's really silly. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity for NASA to mature.
Well, there's always a lot of opportunity for them to, like, I don't know, educate themselves in some regard. I feel like I'm sounding very harsh towards NASA, but it's just the situation. There's that story of like when they were packing like menstrual products to go to space and how many like tampons and products they thought was necessary for one. Like they just, nobody knows these things. It was just absurd what they thought was, I don't know.
Yeah.
In this episode of Ask a Woman.
I think the characterization in the article, though, is a little bit colored in the sense that, like, the NASA concept is if you have two, you have one. If you have three, you have two, right? So the expectation is, like, we're going to damage stuff. So I don't know. I feel like maybe that was just, like, typical NASA over-engineering. Mm-hmm. Having obviously not been in the room conversation, but
well, I
don't know.
What was interesting was that I know that because of gravity and science. Everybody, when you're up in the International Space Station, your body changes and like morphs. But I didn't, I don't think I realized to what extent, because they were like, oh, one astronaut's grown 2 inches just because of like your spine straightening out. And like 2 inches is massive. I think I was thinking like more minuscule, but I'd like to grow 2 inches.
So with some Apollo astronauts. I think that that's like the root of some of the interesting about this book that I'm reading. I wish I remember the title, although it's a little crass in some parts, so maybe I shouldn't promote it. I mean, there's so much that like we found out in the Gemini and Apollo days that sort of helped in the shuttle days, but really now that we have been inhabiting the ISS for so long consecutively, like there's a lot more data, a lot more things that we understand now, and a lot more things we have no idea how to deal with, right? Yeah, like the backup bathroom system in the International Space Station is a bag near your ass. Okay, that seems like an area of opportunity for NASA, right? Like, space tourism is not going to fly because people are going to need to use the restroom. And that's not going to be an okay solution.
Yeah, that's not going to work out. The glamour of space travel.
I mean, that's a tough sell when you're camping. But I can't imagine how that would work with zero gravity.
Oh, there are some audio recordings of
turds
escaping on the flights. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it's a good listen. It's so bizarre. Space is so weird. And like, we've been 250,000 miles from Earth. That's it. That's the furthest we've been. Like, we didn't even really, like, I don't know. I was thinking about this the other day, too. We talk about Apollo 8, like, leaving Earth's sphere of influence, right? But like, we went to the moon, which is inherently like still an Earth's sphere of influence. Like it's orbiting, I mean, I guess technically we were orbiting the moon instead of Earth, or they were, those astronauts. But I mean, we didn't really break the influence of Earth. Like we went to the satellite that's stuck in orbit around Earth. So we've just gone nowhere. Like we've opened the front door and been like, oh, looks big out there. Stepped out and been like, yeah. I'll come back. And then close the door and walk back inside. It's just, oh.
Yes, when the Vogons come and tell us that our planet is scheduled for destruction for an interstellar bypass, and they say, but the plans are at Alpha Centauri, and we're like, well, we can't get to Alpha Centauri, and they say, that's your fault. I mean,
yeah, that part,
they've got a point.
They do have a point. They absolutely have a point. Yeah. Binary Jazz, where Gary complains about space.
Also, though, let's go back to the Binary Jazz board game and what that
I was stuck on the Binary Jazz board game for a while. I was trying to figure out how that would play. Yeah.
Have you not played it?
No. I think I need to write
it. I just made it up, so I don't know what the rules are.
Well, I immediately was like, what kind of little iconography tokens would there be?
Oh, yeah.
Which I got very excited by.
Aliskin goes straight to the like the design aspect, and I go straight to the rules mechanics.
With our powers combined, this is going to be a great board game.
I want to be like I want my character to be angry space guy, like a hunched over, like short ogre-y guy that's really mad about Mars.
He doesn't follow the rules at all. It's just bounces.
Yeah,
around.
Yeah. When you roll the dice, you can move as far as you want because you're not going to get anywhere anyway. We haven't gone very far from home. Yeah, push stuff anywhere on the board doesn't matter anyway.
There's got to be like good card stock. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, that's definitely the
none
the
of this. None of this like thin.
No waffly.
Yeah,
but it has to be a co-op game, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
We all win together. We all lose together. Yeah.
I really like game rights mechanics like the Forbidden Series stuff where the board like kind of moves around. That seems appropriate for us. The board would always be changing.
I like that idea.
I want dice just because
yeah.
They don't need to be conventional dice. Like they could be just like this one has a picture of a Dyson sphere on it and on this side and
the Dyson like
bananas Dyson on the other side.
The Dyson sphere is like that's the botch. If you roll a Dyson sphere, then
roll a Dyson sphere, lose a turn.
Yeah.
Spend your that's like barbecue. Our little iron of Monopoly, or like whatever the little
There would be a spot where you'd have to find a game piece from another board game and introduce it. There would be one chance card.
Just having dice that have nothing to do with the actuality of the game. Play.
Roll the dice. Ignore the results. Play your turn.
Introduce a topic, then move on quickly, because that's what this is about.
The dice could be, so there's a game called Story Dice, and it's just a series of dice with pictures on them, or like icons, and you roll the dice, and then you have to come up with a story that goes along with the dice. So it could be a die that, it could be one die that has different pictures on it, or like many dice that has different pictures on it, and you roll the dice, and then you have to like introduce that as a topic. Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. Kind of like a buzzword, but integration. Ooh. Gary may or may not be with us.
We have lost Gary. Gary is frozen.
I do like dice and sphere dice. This is an intriguing concept.
We're going to need to kickstart this thing.
Just for the one, the dice and sphere dice that you can then include in any board game.
Is this a one dice and sphere turn or a two dice and sphere turn?
Yeah, two. Oh, no. Gary's completely gone.
Now he's gone.
I blame Charlotte. She has a high metal frequency that affects the technology. That,
yeah, that's probably it. That reminds me of a thing I was watching the other day about scams. So there's a show that we watched that we've been watching with the kids called Brain Games. And Brain Games is basically just about the cool and interesting things that your brain does. And they had an episode on scams. And so they had this guy, this whole segment where this guy was selling what he called lava rocks. And they're these sort of like, you know, I don't know, like light, peachy, tan colored rocks that are very smooth and nice. And he's introducing these lava rocks and saying that he's traveled around the world and looking for rocks like these, minerals like these, and that these particular rocks come from a volcano, and they have extra gravity. They have the ionosphere within the rocks increases the gravitational pull of the person that is holding the rocks. And so to prove it, he says, okay, I want you to stand with your arms out like this. And then he pushes on one of your arms to tip you over because, you know, gravity. And then he says, okay, so now here's the rocks. I want you to put a rock in each hand and put your hands out like that. And then does the same thing, and you can't do it. The actual reason why you can't tip them over is because you went from this to this. So pushing down here, you have more, you're more stable, but pushing down this way, you're more likely to tip. So anyway,
I hope this is a continuation of the board game conversation.
this came out of never mind, something else. And
we'll integrate charades into the board game, but this is a TV show.
So all the people that, at least all the people that they were showing on the show, bought these rocks, right? And they're like $20 or something. Within an hour, he made $140. And then they go back to all the people who bought the rocks, and they let them in on the joke. And like, he actually got the rocks from like out, like a walk down the street in a park, and just picked them up. And he's an actor, and he's like, they're doing this experiment about scams, about how easy it is to be a scam. And like, you know, he like follows all these particular like rules, like voice of authority, like he's an attractive young like dude, wearing like, not like, you know, a sweatshirt and a t-shirt like me, like, you know, like a polo shirt and whatever, like, and feels authoritative. It was so, but anyway, that was tied to the gravity of something. Now I can't remember how we got here, but
I think this was a first for us. I think this is the first time any of this has dropped from a call. Is that possible?
I think that's accurate. Yeah.
What do I win?
Still a teenager.
You win Lava Rock.
You get to be in charge of the Kickstarter campaign for our Dice is Your Dice expansion pack.
So did I also miss the topic? Because it would be fun for me to try and guess the topic based on what Chris is trying to define
the topic is. No, we didn't miss the topic. We were I was killing time.
We were careening forward. Mostly because we didn't know what to do when you just disappeared.
I hope someone said, "Do we go with Adamin?" And someone replied, "Obviously."
It was more of
I'll catch up.
Gary's gone now.
Now something what? We said. Yeah, I'm not sure what happened.
So no, we blamed the little one.
Yeah.
I my Wi-Fi dropped on every device in my house at the same time.
Well, baby's effects on technology.
That was how we got here. It was Charlotte's gravitational pull. Yeah. The ionosphere around Charlotte affected the Wi-Fi. Okay, so I think we're ready for the topic, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
We probably have 10 minutes left.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't have a clock on my phone.
I never know until the timer goes off.
Yeah.
Okay.
The topic for this week is hysterosity.
Hysterosity or hysterosity?
Hysterosity. So
hysterosity.
Hysterosity.
Okay, so the hysterosity, the word of the day is hysterosity.
Thank you. I feel like that's a requirement, isn't it?
Yeah. The hysterosity of a thing is it's related to the velocity of historical impact of an event. So
no.
For example, the Civil War had a lot of hysterosity immediately following the Civil War, and maybe playing into the civil rights movement. But the hysterosity of the Civil War today is much lower than the hysterosity was of the Civil War, in the years immediately following the war.
Hysterosity is the definition of the winner is the one who writes history, right? So hysterosity is the study of the alternative viewpoint of historical events.
I like both of your strategies as far as enthusiasm and confidence level. Because if you just sort of let it ride and then let it hang, and then you're just like, yep.
I long for the time when I answer it and Allison gasps at how exactly accurate my answer is.
We've gotten close.
We have gotten close. We've gotten close.
There's never been an audible gasp, though.
Right, that's what I long for.
Then I just sign off and you never hear from me again.
That would be the series ending.
Mic drop.
The good news is that's very unlikely to happen.
My work here is done. I'm not of this earth and I just disappear.
Oh, I hope the visual effects are awesome when you do. I hope there's some flashing and some sparkle.
I'll have to get prepared for this.
Obviously.
My budget will have to. My special effect. It'll just be that classic Apple backdrop of the Eiffel Tower or whatever that weird green screen thing that happens.
Well, speaking of interesting backdrops, did you all know that Zoom now has fake backgrounds?
No.
Oh, well, it's not very effective. What was that?
But he's in space. I think.
I hope you brought a plastic bag with you, Chris.
It is the glamorous side that they just never speak about. Same with all the we've been watching a few mountain climbing and rock climbing documentaries. Ooh, now you're just traveling the world.
There's only three. Oh. I mean, you can add your own.
But my backdrop is already so glamorous.
I wonder if I can do that on the phone. Let's see.
Probably not.
Oh, that'd be amazing if you could do it on
virtual background.
Oh, you can.
Oh, that's good. Hold on. I can add one.
Yeah.
This is great. Let me see if I can find a picture from space. Favorites.
Oh, I like that one. Chris, that one's very like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
It seems
so
to think
here is me.
It seems to think that my face is the same color as the wall behind me.
Yeah.
Here's the first stage, and then here's the second stage, and here's the cutoff between the two.
I love that you already have space backdrops at the ready.
Even better was it was in my favorites, so it wasn't hard to find. I took this photo. I wonder if I step out of the way if you can see the bottom. Yeah, so that's my neighbor's truck in the bottom there. I took this photo in my front
yard.
Wow,
that's impressive. That's way better than the effect it does on mine.
It would be more effective if I like would stay in frame, I guess.
Well, I like when you position yourself right in the midst of it, so it looks almost like an arrow going through your head.
Oh. This is harder to do than it would appear.
Yeah, there we go. A little Steve Martin, a little space.
And here's my new wallpaper on my phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is compelling compelling podcasting. audio content here.
I'm sure
we're
it is.
Fascinated
yeah.
by it, which is all that really matters.
This is when our show made Hysterosity.
It's like jumping the shark.
I think you're wrong, Gary.
Oh, that's probably fair.
That's probably fair.
It's definitely the velocity of history.
I like the concept of combining physics and history, though, in one fell swoop.
It sounds like a made-up word, so it probably has like a silly-ish meaning. But I wonder if I'm thinking that because I'm uneducated. I wonder if I'm thinking that
it
because...
Also, it sounds like hysterectomy to me, so...
It's when you say goodbye.
It's when you say your history?
Your history.
Your personal timeline? You're like...
Yeah.
My hysterosity is, you know, I don't know, yay big.
What, so, osity, what is that suffix... mean banana. Oh, look, sure, it's like we didn't want to go an episode without a banana. There it is. Thank you, that was super helpful. That's what I was looking for.
B is for banana.
Yeah, I was wrong. We do have a banana left, but it's hard to hang a single banana.
Oh no, once you get down to the single banana, you might as well have no bananas.
Yeah,
wise
so
words.
We actually have
wise
one...
words from Allison, everybody.
We actually have one and a half. There's a half of one in a bag.
Or if you've planned ahead and you left the little like crux of the banana bunch at the top and you can still hang it on your on the
That
banana.
Seems like an unlikely thing to get everyone in this house behind.
Yeah.
That's a lot of planning. Like I could personally commit to that, but I don't know if I could get everyone
else
on board.
Board.
Yeah, I mean there's gonna be like a training session and understanding why this is important, you know, the motivation. I'm just not that kind of manager. I'm not a leader, you know? Like it's sitting next to the banana stand. So if you were looking for a banana, as I was earlier, and said, oh no, we're out of bananas, I didn't see it there. I guess I just need to like get up and walk over to the banana stand and inspect it.
So what you're saying is it was obviously flawed and you tried to defend the hysterosity of it retrospectively by saying that it's actually well-designed currently.
Yeah, why not? I can agree with that. I'm not actually sure what I was trying to say, but if someone else can find meaning in what I said, that's awesome. That makes me an artist.
That makes me an artist. Wow. That's an interesting conversation in itself. What makes somebody an artist?
Oh, that is a good conversation. Let's have that. What does hysterosity mean? Let's talk about what makes someone an artist.
Well, apparently, bananas.
Misunderstood. And bananas, apparently.
It's all part of the label. What makes a salad a salad? What makes an artist an artist?
Creating,
I feel like the salad thing's more contentious.
Creating something and calling it art is what makes one an artist.
Yeah.
I mean.
Okay. Well, that was easy.
Putting this cough drop on a white table. That's art. I don't know what it's saying.
Like, take a photo, post that to Twitter. Art done. Yeah.
Would wearing an oversized spacesuit for the next few days be considered art?
Yes, absolutely.
And depending on your locale, nobody will look twice at you.
Also wearing an undersized spacesuit.
Well, fortunately, I have both.
You're like, I'm not ready.
Yeah, I'm going to go on eBay after this episode and buy a spacesuit. They have those on eBay, right? eBay is everything.
Sure. So. Never mind. I was trying to,
Yeah, historicity would be the bendiness of history.
The bendiness?
Flexibility.
I prefer bendiness.
I mean, bendiness is more accurate, but... Agreed.
Exactly.
What she said. See,
remember when we used to do episodes during her nap time? I don't.
Well, I appreciate this because then our gender ratio is equal.
That's true.
That's a fair point.
Eventually, she'll just be old enough to have her own little square on the screen.
Yeah. It'll just be like whatever device she's on, like her chewing on it. At least now.
Well, I'm expecting her to start bringing topics.
Yeah.
A few months time. I'm relinquishing control.
The color red is the topic.
Yeah. I think for a lot of weeks it would be bananas are the topic. Which, she's right.
It's not the topic every week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hysterosity.
Don't get hysterical. It's hysterosity.
I don't know. I'm really curious. I think we jump to the answer, and then we can hit these this listener question having to do with M&Ms.
Oh, having to do with M&Ms. So it's about the historical actuality of persons and events. So like
the historical velocity.
You're pretty close, I think. If not, because it's basically what. Oftentimes it has to do with things of religious nature.
The historicity of Jesus Christ actually being a
person. Yeah, exactly. Like something being a myth or a legend or something. But what I also like about it is that it's also used in context of objects. So like the historicity of, say, two like objects and one like, say... okay, this was in Lincoln's pocket when he was assassinated, and this is the same exact object, but it has no historicity because it was not in Lincoln's pocket when he was assassinated.
So space artifacts are like that. So flown objects obviously have a greater historicity or implied value.
And it's interesting anyway because I also have been thinking about it.
Looking on eBay right now.
Like Marie Kondoing all their stuff and like what has meaning and like, I can have two have the same thing, but I'm like, oh, but this was the one that like had some sort of significance to me historically or whatever.
Mm, yeah. I like Marie Kondo as a verb.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
which is really funny because before this whole Netflix thing, it was actually on my list of things to bring to the table. I was like, Marie Kondo. KonMari. Yeah,
that wouldn't work now. I have not watched the show, but I know of the show, and I have seen her on Stephen Colbert. And she taught him how to fold a fitted sheet, which basically involved rolling it up. And I immediately then did that.
I have not watched it either, and many nights when I'm looking for like something new to watch, I stop on it and go, no, not now. Not ready. Not ready.
You're not ready?
Not ready. I feel like I'm going to get rid of a bunch of stuff, which I'm already sort of doing, cleaning out the garage, getting ready to build an office in there. So, I don't know that I need that distraction. Like, I need that sole purpose right now of getting the garage ready to build a thing. And then I can throw away all my other crap.
I just like how she presents herself to her clients and how no one knows how to talk to a translator. And there's just, like, a lot of cultural things that are minefields that are really humorous to watch as well.
Oh, so she's not an English speaker? I didn't know that part.
No, she's not. She's not.
This could be fun then.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention too. I had to do this for my own benefit at the beginning of the episode. I have a big zit on my nose. It's making me self-conscious. Now that it's out there, I feel better.
Great.
On an audio podcast?
Well,
for all our
fans. I don't know. We're on YouTube, right?
We are.
We are. Nobody watches it.
But if you hate for someone to bump into it and think that this is what my nose always looks like.
Let's get our vanity domain.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And we're all about vanity.
Yeah, we're all about vanity.
Clearly.
Clearly. We're showing up. In a big way.
We've been watching a lot of Great British Bake Off.
Oh, so that's a fun one. Yeah.
So good. So polite.
What's the M&M question? I'm dying to hear it.
Okay, the M&M question. Other than jalapeno, what new kinds of M&M or potato chip flavors would you be curious to try?
So who sent this question in?
This was sent by Sarah.
Hmm.
Like, well, Sarah, I'm glad you asked.
I'm like, it's not me. So
I would go for any like Indian or Thai food flavor or spice. Yeah.
I want
on a chip or an M&M or, you know, generally. The Indian market is amazing and you should go.
You've had like red bean ice cream, right?
Red bean ice cream, no.
Oh, super good. So red bean ice cream, I would recommend, and then I want red bean M&Ms.
I've had mochi.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Would that work in M&M? I mean, I guess like why wouldn't it work?
I kind of agree with the like I want some sort of like Thai curry chip situation.
Yeah.
Red bean M&M, I could get behind for sure.
I had a Thai pizza once. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Might have to go explore the chip section of my local grocery store.
Do you remember when there were the taco flavored chips out a couple? It may still be out. I don't know. Taco flavored chips out a couple years ago.
There's a whole wide array of chip flavors that I haven't tried. There's like poutine flavored ones now.
Oh.
All sorts of things that.
So we've been making poutine, and it's probably like silly American gringo poutine, but I'm calling it poutine anyway because it's like,
try and stop me.
Yeah, exactly. It's like fries with stuff on them.
Oh, because it's delicious and melted and so comforting. Like,
we got a food processor recently, and the food processor has a spiralizer. So we get carrots and potatoes and beets, and we spiralize them so that they're really long, like noodly things, and then bake those, and then like do like tofu scramble or something to put on top, there's a cashew based basil cheese sauce that we make that we put on top.
Do you have a tofu press?
I do, but I don't use it.
Okay.
Usually when I'm making tofu, I'm like, I'm just gonna cut it up and put it on the frying pan.
Yeah.
Pressing is just like, I mean, it's good if the thing, it's good if you actually want it to be drier, but like even then I don't hardly use it.
Nothing about what you described as traditional poutine, but it sounds delicious.
Oh, I know it's not traditional poutine. we had it, but then I had the brilliant idea like over the weekend, let's do a poutine bar. And so we got like, fries, we got like regular like shoestring fries and sweet potato fries, and we made those, and then we just had stuff like I'm gonna make some mushrooms and I'm gonna make some other things, and like just here's a bunch of bowls and here's your fries and put stuff on it.
So good. It's better than like a potato bar in my opinion.
Yeah,
I think bars in general though for food are great idea.
That's basically all of my cooking for the family has been turned just devolved into making a bar of stuff.
But I think that really aligns with like your own adventure board game style mindset.
It's
I find that way less intimidating. I should do bar foods for my not bar food. Never mind. I should do foods in a what would you call that without I don't know
bar format.
I should do foods like Chris does foods.
Yeah,
buffet style.
Yeah, buffet style. Family style.
Yeah,
I guess.
Build your own.
And then you could stand forebodingly behind with like a weird chef's hat.
Yes. Yes.
Flower. I think I own a weird chef's
donate
hat.
Donate to Binary Jazz. And
I think I own a weird chef's hat. I'll have to look for that.
Chef's hats. All of
if I find my weird chef's hat, I'll send you a photo of it.
The really
I think it's not one of the tall ones. I think it's a short one, but it's covered in peppers. I also have pants that match.
Of course it's matching with peppers.
Yeah.
A spiralizer, on a side note, a spiralizer is something that I keep, like, I just need to get one. I don't know why I'm mulling over so much. I don't, it's not a huge purchase.
I did not think, so we had a spiralizer and we didn't really use it. But then we got the food processor and we've been using that a lot because it has a spiralizer. It has, you can shred things with it. And that's extremely helpful because, like, we often try to, like, we're always trying to stick more vegetables in the kids' food. And carrots are an easy thing to stick in. But shredding carrots is obnoxious. But I can get a stick of, I can shred a stick of carrot in like 2 seconds. Like, zoom, done.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And so sneaky.
Yes. Yeah, and then also with the food processor, just generally you can sneak in other foods, like just throw it in the food processor and it gets chopped into little pieces, and then it's much easier to like eat and by accident.
We do. Well, I say we. Rhonda does a lot of muffins with vegetables in them as a Trojan horse of vegetables for the children.
The Trojan horse of vegetables. I don't even need to be that sneaky because I know I'm the one that's making my own food, and yet I still appreciate a good a good Trojan horse muffin.
Oh, my sister-in-law makes some zucchini bread that's like crazy good.
Forget the board game. We just need to come out with a Binary Jazz cookbook.
All of the above. The cookbook.
Maybe that's part of the board game.
The cookbook will be the stretch goal of the board game. So if we get our enough donations or pledges for our board game, then at a certain point we'll get to the point where we can also bundle a cookbook.
Nice.
So what kind of funding will we need for this? The digital edition we would need
any funding.
$8. Yeah, $8 would get the digital edition done, I feel.
we need to price out printing costs. It would also depend on if we're doing actual like plastic pieces or just punch out tokens
or Dyson sphere.
And dice is going to be an expense. Yeah,
I mean, like, the meat alone
dice are cheap.
Produce these Dyson spheres.
There's not going to be actual Dyson spheres involved.
I when I was doing the e-commerce thing, we were at a trade show in Las Vegas, and there was a booth set up that did nothing but dice. And I had learned this trick from another sales guy somewhere else, and he always carried a 12-sided dice with him. So when he was out drinking with people that weren't customers, just colleagues, out drinking with people, they would just roll, and the person who rolled the lowest number would be the one that paid for drinks. That was the fair way of determining who paid for that round. And they do it every round. So that just, took it
that
out, so it never felt like
really likes D&D.
He did, yeah, he did.
No one else would carry a 12-sided die.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.